Magnesium plays a critical role in vital bodily functions, including energy production, heart health, immunity, and more restful sleep. Magnesium is ubiquitous in metabolic pathways that affect virtually all organ systems. But magnesium deficiency or insufficiency is one of the most pervasive nutritional problems afflicting the majority of Americans. Ultra-processed foods, many common medications, stress, and medical conditions like diabetes all deplete magnesium. So I'm excited to tell you about MagSRT from Jigsaw Health. MagSRT has rightfully earned a reputation as the most popular, most bioavailable, and best-tolerated magnesium brands in the world. The developers of MagSRT have solved a problem that deters many from getting adequate intake of elemental magnesium. Their unique formulation is gentle on the stomach and doesn't produce unwanted GI effects. For more information and to order MagSRT, just go to JigsawHealth.com. That's JigsawHealth.com. Use coupon code HOFFMAN10 for $10 off your order. That's JigsawHealth.com and use code HOFFMAN10 for MagSRT, time-released magnesium. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who is our nutritionist in residence. Hence the name Q&A with Layla. You submit questions. We, ensemble, answer them. Questions come to radioprogram@AOL.com. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Chilly outside.
It's chilly outside. We had a busy day seeing some interesting patients at the end of the day, but I always enjoy capping off the day with a lively discussion with you and seeing what some of our listeners have on their minds. So radioprogram@AOL.com gets you into the podcast with your questions. And we have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But before we get to questions, I just want to comment on an article that appeared in Journal of the American Medical Association, certainly no friend of natural or alternative therapies. It appeared in the cardiology section of JAMA, and it is entitled, this is a long one, Association of Coronary Artery Plaque with Low-Density Lipoprotein Cholesterol Levels and Rates of Cardiovascular Disease Events Among Symptomatic Adults. Okay. So what they essentially found in this study, and I'm actually a little bit confused why they say these are symptomatic adults. Because if they're symptomatic, how come some of them had an absence of coronary artery calcium? I guess what they did here is they looked at a bunch of people who likely had heart disease, and then they scanned them, and they also determined their LDL cholesterol levels. Now, we know that LDL is the enemy. It's the implacable enemy of cardiologists and doctors all over the world. We want to play cholesterol limbo with that.
Right.
How low can you go with your LDL?
Yes.
And it's gotten progressively lower. It used to be like, oh, if your LDL was 130 or less, you were okay. Mm-hmm. And if it's over that, then we treat you with a statin to lower it. Now, especially people who have had heart disease, they want it as low as 70, 60, 50. Oof. They really want to.
It's going to be a lot of dementia.
It's going to go into the basement.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, all kinds of other potential consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So, however, we take a more nuanced approach. It is very common for us to do a second opinion on people who've been told they need statins.
Yes.
And, you know, frankly, we agree that some people need statins. They've got
absolutely
a ton of plaque.
Yes.
They're high risk.
Mm-hmm.
They come to us, tell Dr. Hoffman and Layla, tell us it ain't so. And we have to tell them, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're loaded with plaque. You're high risk of a heart attack or stroke. And you probably should take a statin. We do believe that statins
absolutely
confer protection to people at high risk.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, statins are being used to treat LDL when sometimes the coronary artery scan, which is an easy scan.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they're offering it, it's February's Heart Month, they're offering it like $200 or some, it's on special.
Yeah, yeah.
At our local radiologist.
Uh-huh.
We send people to Inner Imaging here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, some people with enormously high cholesterol, could be like 280, 300 or more,
with a high LDL, you know, an LDL of 180 or something, they don't have any plaque. Why is that? Well, there's a multiplicity of factors that go into that, you know, such as are they obese, hypertensive, diabetic, especially insulin resistant, do they have inflammation? Sometimes it doesn't add up to where the rubber meets the road in the coronary arteries. So anyway, in this study, what they found is that people who have a very low level of plaque, even if they have a high LDL, perhaps greater than 190, are they at risk? They may not be. So
they may not be.
So we need a more nuanced approach. That's why today, actually, we saw a guy who fit the criteria for this. He's a healthy guy, exercises.
And he's been on a statin.
He's been on a statin. He's 60 years old. He's been on a statin for 30 years.
Yeah.
It was identified very early that he had a high cholesterol, but he also has a low HDL, which is a little more worrisome. They said go on a statin. So I look, I'm going to... he was happy to go get the scan, and we'll see.
We'll see.
He has a very low score, perhaps we can take him off. Of note is that his blood sugar is a little elevated. We know that statin drugs tend to elevate blood sugar.
That's right.
And so he's not one of these people who complains bloody murder that he's having leg pain or weakness or brain fog.
He's very tolerant of it.
He's very tolerant, which some people are. And you know, if he needs it, I'm happy to leave him on it. But if he doesn't and he has a zero score, I'm going to make the case that perhaps he doesn't need it.
That's great.
And free him from dependence on yet another medication.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's typical patient that we might see. So, get scanned.
Get scanned.
Yeah.
And see if there's any coronary plaque, which should be the determinant, the criteria.
Plus, I have a patient coming in tomorrow who was very worried. Had been told of, and she's not a youngster, she's pushing, she's a 75 or 80. I just saw her test results. And, you know, she has some of the hallmarks of risk. She's overweight and she has high cholesterol. Zero plaque in every artery, in the left main coronary artery, in the right coronary artery, in the, you know, the circumflex artery, all the arteries are pristine in this person. Go figure.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to give her, I was going to call her today, but I said she's coming in, you know, this week or next week. I'll give her the good news in person.
Yeah, you get to see her happy face.
Party.
That's wonderful.
Party.
That's terrific. That's always terrific news to give to
you. So anyway, we'll get to questions. That article I posted on social media, and you can find the link to it. Radio program at AOL.com. Let's go with questions.
We've got a handwritten letter. You hear this?
What? Paper.
It's paper.
Let's put it close to our microphone.
It's a handwritten letter.
Oh, how nice.
I love that.
And it's written in cursive and it highlighted.
Yes.
Yeah, with the yellow marker.
Exactly. Straight to his question.
Right.
This is from Tom. Tom says, I'm taking high doses of turmeric Mareva, about 500 milligrams, 3 in the morning, 3 at night, for osteoarthritis.
Okay.
My question, is there a limit to how much turmeric one can take every day? Are there side effects? Also, how many hours does a turmeric offer pain relief? And should I be spreading the doses more frequently throughout the day?
The answer is kind of indeterminate to that, because turmeric is not that well absorbed, so it's the liposomal form, like Mareva.
It takes Mareva,
Future Farm also makes a liquid liposomal, which is nice. I keep it on by the sink in the bathroom, and when I'm, you know, after I brush my teeth, I'll squirt a little curcumin into my mouth so that I remember to take my curcumin. I also take the pills as well, so I'm loaded with curcumin. I don't see a downside. I don't think there's a hepatotoxicity.
Yes.
Liver. I don't think there's a renal toxicity. You know, kind of the more the merrier.
Yeah, it's terrific for inflammation.
Is there a set dose? I think you have to say subjectively, try with, try without, see if your aches and pains abate.
Yeah.
You may have to take something else along with it, like fish oil.
He was wondering, too, are there any other supplements that can complement the turmeric?
I like turmeric. Ache Action.
Ache Action.
That's
got a little, protocol.
Boswellan,
and it's also got some willow bark.
Willow bark,
which is kind of a cousin, a bit to aspirin.
They explained though when I talked to product formulator for them.
Yes.
Levin.
Mm-hmm.
He said that because it's the natural form, that it doesn't have the gastrointestinal bleeding effects.
Yeah.
And it's relatively low dose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also broad spectrum. It's a lot of the mm-hmm. plant compounds in white willow bark. So it's more of a entourage effect from all the different compounds working together mm-hmm. to reduce inflammation. And hence, it's not, going to damage the intestinal lining.
Yeah.
Or thin the blood excessively, so that you get, some bruising or something like you might get with high dose aspirin.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good news.
So those two paired together in fish oil, would be good.
Mm-hmm.
You
good
might
stuff.
Want, if you're trying to support joint health, take glucosamine with chondroitin.
Yes. With MSM.
MSM.
As well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those are also good, Tom. For you to take if you're not already taking them. Because it sounds like in this letter he's put all of his eggs in the turmeric basket.
Yes.
So to speak.
And he's
but
taking,
other things.
Faithfully fairly high doses.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be good for his brain, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Perhaps also for arterial health.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. Tom, thank you so much for your handwritten letter.
Yeah.
That is such a treat.
Yeah.
Even got the envelope attached to it. That's fun. Anyway.
It used to be, reminds me of the days of Carlton Fredericks.
Hmm.
Carlton Fredericks was a nutritionist. Some of you were listeners will remember Carlton Fredericks on WR Radio in New York and syndicated across the country. And he would have, he would say, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Yes.
And we will send you the protocol for whatever it was that
ailed
you.
An SASE.
And he had like a room full of ladies who were volunteers, maybe take them out to lunch or something for the holidays.
Uh-huh.
And they dutifully, stuffed envelopes with the self-addressed stamped envelope, sent them back. So people would get an answer.
An answer, that's neat.
It was like the proto podcast, precursor to the current media.
Wow. So, we've got an email here from Carol. Hi, Doc. Question. If your cells are damaged and they can be repaired, does that equate to better health? How much
question.
Time do we have?
Say that again.
If your cells are damaged and they can be repaired, does that equate to better health? If they can be repaired?
The answer is indubitably yes.
Yeah.
And we have a great faith in the restorative capabilities of the body.
Yes.
Even at advanced stages of disease or aging.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have perhaps the ability to regenerate a lost limb.
Yeah.
But many organs have the potential to repair and regenerate.
Yes. And to return to good health.
Yeah.
You know, our bodies kind of know what to do if we would simply let it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's that inner healing capability that we want to foster and bring out.
Wasn't it only recently, and remember, for decades and decades, we all thought that once your brain cells died, that was it.
Right.
No new neurons.
That's what I thought, in college. It's like, I'd wake up after, a night of, shall we say, excess.
Yeah.
And I'd say, I'd say to my roommates, how many neurons did we kill last night?
We've all done that.
Yeah, okay. Probably millions of them. And,
Bye-bye.
Then we get together for our, 50th reunion.
Uh-huh.
And, we're all doing okay, pretty much. who knows how much better we would have been if we had.
And you probably got back many of the million, right?
We might have regenerated some connections,
Exactly.
There is this BDNF thing, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is miracle growth for the brain, which through exercise and certain healthy habits.
Yes, especially aerobic exercise is good for BDNF. Yeah.
So,
if your cells are damaged and they can be repaired, yes. Because you're not in good health if your cells are damaged. And
I would say that
repaired,
what this little sentence or two encapsulates is the axiom mm-hmm. on which natural medicine is founded, naturopathic medicine and integrative medicine, functional medicine, which is to encourage the body's repair capability.
Yes.
And support them.
Yeah.
And not get in the way.
Because our bodies can be quite resilient.
Right.
If we let them, if we do the right things. Carol, thank you for that very profound question.
Yeah, good point. Which to pause and allow one of our sponsors to help you understand how you can better repair your body. Here goes.
You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands that I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to one of our questions. It just brings up something interesting. I was talking to a patient today. We're actually talking about a relative of hers who was suffering from a severe liver disease. Mm. And with the severe liver disease, he was having problems thinking and remembering.
Mm.
He had no short-term memory. He's a relatively young man. He's 50 years old. I don't know whether it's alcoholic liver disease or whether it's infectious in causation. But anyways, he has cirrhosis. And one of the consequences of cirrhosis is something called Wernicke's encephalopathy.
Yeah.
And Wernicke's encephalopathy, I said, guess what? You know, we have a supplement called Zobria that we talk a lot about.
Which is
a potent form of thiamine or B1. He goes, yes, they're giving him thiamine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loads
yeah.
of it.
Right. So it's, since I'm out of hospital practice, I'm not treating a lot of patients with severe liver disease or alcoholic patients. Mm-hmm. I used to treat them all the time because I worked at the VA hospital in New York. We would always give patients thiamine injections.
Mm. Not B12, but B1.
B1.
Yeah.
B1.
For injections. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. We've got an email from Robert. My wife, who's 83 years old, has been taking 5,000 IUs of vitamin D for the past 2 years. However, a recent blood test indicated a level of only 32. I might add she has an ostomy for the past 4 years.
This is for which vitamin?
For vitamin D. She's been taking 5,000 IUs for the last 2 years, but her blood level is a 32. Mm-hmm. She has an ostomy, which shouldn't have much to do.
It doesn't have much to do with the absorption.
No. Yeah. And D is created in the liver, the kidneys, and...
Right.
Yeah.
So, there may be some consequences to a shortened gut in terms of absorption.
Mm.
So, she just needs to take a little more. Now, 32 is considered adequate because 30 is the cutoff, but it's not optimal.
It's not.
So, we want to go... I mean, that patient, I would try him on, you know... maybe 50,000 once a week, which averages to 7,000 a day.
Yeah.
Or I would have them take 10, retest them quickly to make sure they're not overdosing.
Exactly. Retest them in 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And, to see what's happening.
You know, and the solution might be to give them, you know, 5 alternating with 10. 5 mm-hmm. one day, 10 the other.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I would tell Robert is she's taking 5,000 IUs of vitamin D, but we don't know that it's D3. And
right.
if it's D2, I'm assuming it's D3.
Right.
But if it was D2...
Maybe less bioavailable.
It could actually... It's less bioavailable, but it can also deplete D3.
Oh, yeah.
According
yeah.
to recent research.
Yeah.
So taking D3 is not a good thing at all.
D2 is not a good
thing. Taking D2 is not a good
thing
at all.
Which is the prescribed form of vitamin D.
Of
generally.
Vitamin D.
Prescription
right.
vitamin D is generally D2, mm-hmm. and health food store vitamin D is D3. So I think the health food stores have it over the conventional.
Yeah.
In this case.
Yeah. So, Bob.
Opinion, D2 is not horrible.
No.
It's just not as
optimal. It's not
optimal.
Great.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not nearly as optimal. So, what I was concerned about is the recent research where it may actually deplete D3, mm-hmm. taking D2.
They did a study recently that I actually shared on my radio program on vitamin D for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Who were metabolically challenged. They were overweight or pre-diabetic. They're young kids, you know, children and, you know, adolescents, teenagers. And they gave them three different types of vitamin D. 600, 1,000, and 2,000. And they found that the most benefits were achieved at 600, just 600 a day.
For wow!
These, yeah. But they're, you know, these are generally pint-sized. They're smaller. And the benefits were in terms of cardiovascular things like cholesterol and HDL and also insulin resistance.
Wow.
And even after stopping the intervention, they had long-lasting benefits from the vitamin D.
Because D, it's fat-soluble, so it's going to last longer in your body. It's not like taking water-soluble vitamins like the B vitamins and vitamin C.
Yeah. So, you know... Yeah. D could be, if anybody with metabolic syndrome, they're going to need more vitamin D. People with diabetes, you're going to need more vitamin D.
Yes, high blood pressure with any of those kind of risk factors.
Cardiometabolic problems, overweight, certainly,
Okay. Well, we've got an interesting tale here from Carolyn, who is asking about COVID vaccines and clinical. Did I say COVID?
COVID.
COVID vaccine.
Where have you been for the past couple of years?
I haven't read the word COVID in a little while, which is such a nice break.
Right.
And clinical trials. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I was very interested in the comment from your listener who had been a subject in the Pfizer trial and was very concerned with the follow-up. We had somebody who wrote in last
week.
There's
been some problems with those trials.
Yeah. Well, Carolyn says, I had two friends. They were in the Moderna trial, a husband and a wife. They had their shots in September 2020, and it was unblinded by December 2020. The wife was in the control group, but then she was offered a shot from the competitor, which would have been
Pfizer.
Yeah, Pfizer, which would have been the competitor, which she took.
Right.
So by June 2021, the husband had also gotten himself two doses of the Pfizer and was eagerly awaiting approval for boosters. Well, the wife got a bad case of COVID in July.
After having the two Pfizer.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. And both were sick in January 2022, as many people were.
Right.
But honestly, where's the follow-up? And how can a test subject in one vaccine study go out unsupervised and get two shots of the competition's product?
Now, wait a minute. But they were both controls. They were not...
She was in the control.
He had three then.
Yeah. He had two shots and a booster.
Oh, two shots and a booster.
Yeah.
But, well, okay. It should be studied. Mm-hmm. The effect should be studied. But it is now not, it used to be verboten to mix and match.
Exactly.
You shouldn't mix and match.
Now
they said, well, there may be some advantage to mixing and matching because you got some degree of protection from one and maybe complementary protection from the other and you get like a,
there's no stringent follow-up because the husband and the wife was offered the Pfizer.
Right.
The husband was also offered the Pfizer and took it and was awaiting a booster. So it's like, where is the integrity in any of these clinical trials with the vaccines if people are out and about doing whatever they want?
Well, they should look at long-term outcomes.
Yes. Yes.
But I don't know. I guess... they just were looking at that confined interval of time.
Yeah.
And then study over. Do what you want. You know, you're on your own.
You're on your... Okay. So they were just looking at a predetermined period of time.
Right.
Maybe 4 weeks, maybe 3 months, maybe...
Whatever.
Something like that.
Right.
So... And Carolyn urged the gentleman to at least have a D-dimer test before he had more shots.
Another one to test for clots? Potential for blood clots.
Yeah, which can be a big deal, obviously. So, Carolyn, yes, she says this seems to be, to me, very sloppy, quote, science.
Mm-hmm.
Agree. Wow.
Right.
Really agree. Anyway, so here we are. These trials are ongoing, right?
So what's kind of weird is, you know, you're in a trial and you don't know if you're getting any protection.
Mm.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But it's blind. It's blinded.
Yeah. And then it became unblinded in December.
Well, they obviously want to hurry that up because it's like, oh, it's unethical to not confer the benefits of the great benefits of these vaccines. So let's hurry up and stop it and then say, here, you can take a vaccine. But it's kind of weird that they didn't offer them the vaccine that they were testing.
Exactly.
They're saying, hey, it's the Moderna is great. It works.
Yeah.
Here, take some Pfizer.
Take some Pfizer. Wait. Here, take this J&J.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So we've got another email here from Price. Do you still like Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT?
Yes.
Which was reported as being very highly bioavailable.
And gentle.
Thank you for all the great podcasts.
Gentle on the stomach.
Mm-hmm. Gentle on the stomach. Yes. Yeah, we like Jigsaw Magnesium. Right. It's the main form. I believe the main form of magnesium there is malate.
Okay.
Magnesium malate, which is a mix,
I think, Jigsaw.
I think it's reacted magnesium that is more of the mix.
Okay.
I think the SRT is adding something different.
Keep talking. I'm going
to
look it up.
But yeah, Jigsaw Magnesium was known to have magnesium malate, which is known to be the most bioavailable form of magnesium.
Is it?
Okay. Malate. And malate is also particularly good for energy, that's why it's also...
You're right.
Yeah.
But it's also got some other cofactors. Jigsaw magnesium has what's called dimagnesium malate, along with a little bit of vitamin C, a little bit of B6, and a little bit of folate as 5-methyltetrahydrofolate. So those are cofactors, I think, for magnesium absorption.
Which is helpful for magnesium.
Okay.
Right?
And then you can also get the B3 if you don't like the B vitamins. Sometimes people don't want extra B vitamins, so you can just get the dimagnesium malate. You were right.
Exactly.
Which is a more targeted, has a reputation for being good for fibromyalgia.
And magnesium malate, I did read a report where because it can be energizing, it may not be the magnesium of choice to take in the evening for sedation purposes to get ready for sleep.
Well, you know, it seems to me, from my vague recollection of biochemistry, you know, one regret in life is I wish I'd paid more attention during biochemistry, but I kind of rushed through it and just passed it, you know, and it, you know, said thank God, and then, you know, wished that I had, you know, I could have taken a whole, you know, a doctorate in it or gotten a master's degree in it. That would be great because I could really, really understand all these pathways that are complex. But malic acid is in the Krebs cycle pathway. And so maybe it feeds into the energy cycle.
Ah, there we go.
And magnesium is everywhere in the Krebs cycle.
Yeah.
So those of you who have the most minimal education in biology, you probably were bedeviled by
the citric acid cycle.
The Krebs cycle, which looks, you know, they see the diagram, it's a circle, and there's many points of entry with fumaric acid, malic acid, you know, all these steps.
So they're being fed by magnesium. The vitamins feed the Krebs cycle as well, which explain the energy that you often get from B vitamins, unless there's some inositol in there, which can kind of help calm all that down. For some people who report being energetic from B vitamins, some people need it.
I understand biochemistry the way most drivers understand the engines in their cars.
Okay.
They work.
Okay. Here's a spark plug. Okay, we'll stop there.
Right. I know that there's pistons and rods and...
Yeah. Okay.
Now there's batteries.
Yeah. Gabe writes, Dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman, my mother is close to 80 years old and would benefit from supplementation. However, she doesn't want to take a bunch of different vitamins.
Okay.
Is there a single multivitamin or supplement that we would recommend for her at her age?
We kind of demur.
She's close to 80.
We kind of demur from that.
Yeah, she's not on any meds.
We believe in personalized medicine.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
We want to know what's going on with her. We want to maybe do some tests.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, not everybody has access to that or is willing to undergo that evaluation.
Yes.
So, one-stop shop. She could take something like Propax with NT factor, which has a multiple.
Yeah.
And has some NT factor, which is nice for older people. And it's got a little fish oil.
Mm.
So it comes in a convenient pack, so you remember it.
Right.
And it, you know,
put it in your purse,
like
off you go.
This big jar kind of thing, which has packets in it. So Propax with NT factor. Go to ntfactor.com and get that.
There you go.
And there are other... Do you have any other ideas possibly?
Oh, that's a good one.
Maybe not enough vitamin D in there. Probably. A minimal amount of vitamin D.
Might need probably 2,000 IU of D would be helpful.
Wouldn't be bad.
For most of the population.
Yeah.
So considering that, Gabe, thank you for that very, very thoughtful question.
Certainly not a Centrum
No. Please don't take a Centrum or a one a day if that still exists out there. I don't even know anymore. So
it does.
You don't want it does one a day?
Yeah.
Vitamins?
That probably vastly eclipses the sales of any of the companies that we talk about.
Yeah. What was the other one? Did it start with a U? I'm remembering something back in the 70s. No, maybe it was the one a day that I'm thinking of. No. Okay. All right. Gabe, thank you for that question. Now, we've got an interesting email here from Bonnie, who writes about zinc picolinate and possible liver damage. Mm-hmm. In a guide to home-based COVID-19 treatment published by the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons.
Well, that's a good organization.
Yeah.
I like them.
They published the following statement about zinc picolinate. Zinc in the form of zinc picolinate form is not recommended following reports of liver damage and tumors from studies about 20 years ago.
Yeah, this I see a 2012 study here. It says zinc and liver disease, and it's by, where's the study from? It's in Nutrition Clinical Practice, which is not the most prominent journal. And it alludes to some studies suggest improvement in liver function following zinc supplementation.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, Bonnie goes on to say that according to AAPS, following these reports about liver damage, and these are from studies 20 years ago, not just 10 years ago, right? The German Commission E that regulates supplements used in medical practice in Germany has banned this form of zinc.
Right.
Now, Bonnie says no studies from 20 years ago were cited, and I'm not sure how to discover if it is really true that zinc picolinate is banned in Germany for medical use. What I do know is that many, many reputable companies in the USA sell this form
of
zinc.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think? And Bonnie,
I think if there really was a concern about it, I don't think they would offer it.
Yes.
Some of these big reputable companies, because they don't want to hurt people. They don't want liability either.
Right.
So I don't think there's a big problem. It's considered the premium form of zinc that's better absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other forms of zinc.
Yeah. The only danger I have found in my research about zinc.
Zinc citrate. And
The only warning that I found is taking too much and over a long period of time because it can deplete copper.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you probably don't want to take.
It can also be immunosuppressive if there's something about that.
You don't want to take over 40 milligrams a day for a very long period of time. Certainly take it if you've got a cold or a flu for a few weeks. That's perfectly fine. But taking it long term, you would need to balance it with copper. You probably want to look at zinc levels over time as well. That would be a good idea. So there is such a thing as too much.
Here's another article, you know, as I look it up. Chromium picolinate is another form, and there's zinc picolinate. And this is a scientific opinion in the European Food Safety Authority, which is the European Union version of the FDA.
Yeah.
And what they say here, it's not complete here, but they don't say that there's a problem with it, I don't think. But I have to say that the article cuts off.
Okay.
But
interesting.
So this may be one of those old things that never really panned out,
in my opinion. Yeah. But what's disturbing, Dr. Hoffman, is that this is in a guide to home-based COVID-19 treatment published by AAPS.
Yeah, maybe, you know, we should, I'm not a member, but I've considered joining them, but maybe we should.
Because a guide to home-based COVID-19 treatment means take your latest pharmaceutical, still patented, or take the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Certainly not zinc
home-based treatment. You know, there are all these, you know, here's an analogy. It's like I got probably too many clothes. I've accumulated them over the years. You know, if I buy like, you know, 3 or 4, you know, articles of clothes every year, you know, I've been around for a long time. So it's like a lot of stuff accumulates. And I kind of hate to, you know, that, what's the name of the tidiness person,
Marie Kondo.
I need a Marie Kondo.
Yes.
You know, but
does it spark joy?
Yes.
You have to hold up your article of clothing, Dr. Hoffman, and say, does it spark joy in me? And if not, you toss.
Right. So by analogy, you know, we were looking for all these new drugs to treat COVID.
Yeah.
But actually, we have a lot of these old drugs that are lying around.
Yeah.
And, you know, it turns out that some of them are effective.
Yeah.
Like Luvox, which is an obsessive compulsive disorder drug. Even Pepcid may be helpful, which is an antacid, an old-fashioned antacid, 50 years old. There's a study that suggests that disulfiram can be helpful for COVID.
Mm.
Disulfiram is an old drug. It's also known as antabuse. It's given to alcoholics.
Yeah.
Because if you drink alcohol while you're taking that drug,
you'll be sick.
You feel like you've been kicked by a mule. You know, it's just where you get a really bad reaction.
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as you don't drink alcohol while you're taking it, it seems to have a pretty significant effect against COVID. So we're sort of discovering that these old drugs may have effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is part of what we should have been doing all along.
Yeah.
Instead of looking for pie-in-the-sky, new, very advanced, expensive treatments, let's look at what's in our closet.
Absolutely.
You know, already.
Absolutely.
You know,
and,
I mean, it's definitely more fun and better for the economy to...
Better for and save people's lives, don't you know?
No, it's
stuff
actually
that's
more,
already there.
It's more fun to go shopping and buy something new and expensive.
Yeah, you know? That's true. That's true.
But
you could still go shopping in your closet.
That's right. I do that.
Yeah.
I do that.
That's fun. It's like, oh, remember this? Yeah. I haven't seen that.
Show it some love. I got to show this some love.
Exactly. So.
But those bell bottoms don't look good.
Yeah.
I think we're going over for part one.
Hmm.
So we may have an abbreviated part two. We divide our podcast into two parts. But in a burst of enthusiasm, we've exceeded our time limit for part one. So let's give me a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
Should I take a booster when my antibody level is this high?
All right. Great question. Take it up in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and where you can get a question sent to us is via radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll be right back.